From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Perhaps no group has been more vilified by the Trump administration than people who identify as transgender. The federal government has been pushing them out of athletics and education, and many people are now saying enough. Today on the show, you'll hear from a Corvallis city councilor who successfully implemented sanctuary status for transgender people in their city. They believe that just like current law that helps protect undocumented people from ICE raids, this new law will help protect transgender people from harassment. And our expert in gender issues from Oregon State will talk about what is happening to the entire LGBTQ plus community and where the pushback is coming locally and nationally. Corvallis isn't just the home of Oregon State University. It's becoming a real hub of activity to support and protect transgender rights. Right now, you'll hear from a Corvallis City Council member who successfully created a law that places Corvallis at the heart of resistance to the Trump administration's war on transgender rights. Allison Bowden, a Corvallis City Councilor who represents Ward 6, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
For sure. Happy to be here.
Yeah. As I understand it, you brought forth a resolution to make Corvallis a sanctuary city for transgender people. Talk about your intention of offering up this resolution.
Yeah. So this idea was birthed out of an interaction that council had about a month ago during our public comment period. This lovely woman, Danielle Chambers, came and spoke to us and talked about how transgender people are under attack and how even though Corvallis is a much safer place than where she moved from, it still felt that there wasn't enough being done to assure the community that their rights are protected, that they want to preserve the diversity of our city. And so afterward, myself and another counselor chatted with her. We set up some meetings and we went through and talked about what we'd like to see out of a resolution of this type. And it was a really cool process because it wasn't just myself or just Danielle, but it was a document that got taken around and got feedback from a variety of different community groups, including the Mid-Willamette Valley Trans Network. Mm-hmm. It was born out of a community request, but it was a collaboration between multiple partners, and it was really impactful to see how many people came and spoke during the public comment period to the resolution.
Yeah. Could you tell us what the resolution does?
Yeah. This resolution states that the city will not use funding, resources, or people power to prevent any gender-affirming care or access to gender-affirming care. So this includes things, basic things like physically, blocking access or using police to enforce any federal laws or proclamations that may come through, all the way down to simple things like not using digital resources that promote like anti-trans propaganda or types of things that would prevent someone's access to any type of gender-affirming healthcare. Okay. It basically states, we are here with you, we hear you, we see you, and we want you to feel safe in our community.
Okay. And then what's your hope, what's your hope of the impact of this resolution going forward?
I want people to know that we value every single person in the community and will resist any efforts to erase or harm you. Trans people are under attack in a lot of places, and really what we need is somewhere where we can feel safe, heard, respected, and valued. And that's what I want this resolution to be, a clear and loud proclamation of. We are a safe place for all people.
Did you kind of utilize, and those sanctuary laws are often talked about in terms of not working with like a federal organization like ICE to go in and, you know, arrest or question people regarding their immigration status. Did you kind of use those sanctuary laws that are on the books to kind of put this together to kind of make it emulate that sort of already existing kind of statute?
Absolutely, yeah. In 2016, the city of Corvallis passed a resolution that officially stated that Corvallis was a sanctuary city for immigrants and refugees. And that was a lot of the basis and model language. But also, there are a number of other cities, not just in Oregon, but across the United States that have passed similar language. So when we were doing research, and Danielle brought forward a few of those resolutions so that we could model that language and make sure that we are because this is both of our first resolutions. I am a new city councilor and have not submitted my own resolution yet. So we were heavily leaning on kind of language and formatting of things like City of Pottsfield in Massachusetts, and the Sanctuary City Resolution for Corvallis in 2016. And then also the Oregon Shield laws have a lot of good language about how specifically gender-affirming healthcare is protected. So kind of those three resources were a lot of the basis for the structure. But there's very Corvallis-specific things in here, too.
Okay. Let me quickly reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking with Corvallis City Council member Allison Bowden. Do you have concerns about, you know, the federal government looking at this and saying, we're going to do something about this? I know there's a lot of state law that protects municipalities such as Corvallis, but obviously, you know, this in some ways, because there are pretty few cities that have sanctuary laws like this, you're kind of putting a target on yourself.
Yeah, it's definitely something that was a small consideration, and it was something that our city attorneys also mentioned as a potential consequence. But overall, it is more important to us as a community, as city councilors, as a municipality, to make people feel safe than spread fear, harm, and misinformation. And Corvallis isn't alone. We stand in solidarity with organizations like the Corvallis School District, like the City of Eugene, like OSU, and the Department of Education for Oregon, who has issued statements about how they plan to continue and protect the access to education for refugee, immigrant, and gender expansive students. So really, as long as we are presenting a unified front against hatred and the vitriol coming from the federal administration, I think that together with the solidarity we can create together will protect us and make a safe place for Oregon.
Okay. You talked about this earlier, but I want to just kind of maybe pull the string a little bit more in terms of, since doing this, talk about what you've heard from your constituencies. You know, you talked about a lot of people at the public comment period. Just maybe just going about your day, what are you hearing from folks about this ordinance?
I'm hearing joy. I'm hearing, this was really important to me. Sorry, I'm just getting a little emotional. I'm hearing how people feel like they can breathe a little bit and know that in an official city document, they are supported and respected. It feels weird being thanked for something that as basic as a human right, but the feedback and the support we've seen has been amazing. It makes me feel just so incredibly happy to be part of this beautiful, diverse community and to know and to, yeah.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. Sorry.
No, that's great. Allison, my last question for you is this. You know, in terms of chances are other municipalities may reach out to you and say, okay, how did you do this? Maybe take us through sort of how you put this together. And I'm wondering, too, it could be that cities in more red areas, red states may consult with you about how to do this. What would you tell them? What would you tell them in terms of how you went about doing this and kind of what you might expect?
Well, number one, talk to your community. Get feedback from the people who you are trying to protect. Because ultimately, and if you are a cisgender or even like a heterosexual counselor or, you know, legislator trying to protect people, you need to consult with the groups that you're trying to protect to make sure the language is in line with their values, with what they want to see out of their local government, out of their state. And you'll be surprised what you learn sometimes and what language you want to see. Like, for example, we're not just a trans sanctuary city. We're a trans, intersex, and gender expansive sanctuary city. The intersex portion is something that a lot of people, especially even in the queer community, a lot of people just forget about. And so that's why we wanted to specifically call out like intersex folks as being included, as being stated in the name of this resolution, that they are valued and they're important enough to be in literally the title. So that's an example of just something that you not necessarily would have thought about. That's one thing. So talk to your community. And then the pushback is harder. And I think, that's a much harder question to ask. And we are a little insulated in Corvallis. It's a pretty blue, strong blue community. But I know that areas even close to our city are not as, are a little more divided, let's say. So that's definitely a huge obstacle that we didn't necessarily have to face there. And that's why solidarity is important, because when you're working with people that multiple groups of people, you're always stronger together than when you're standing alone. So those are my two pieces of advice. Talk to your community and stand with the people who support you.
Okay. Allison Bowden, they are a Corvallis city councilor with Ward 6. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
Professor Susan Shaw is an expert on the cultural and political happenings regarding transgender issues, and she's got a lot to say about where we are and where we're going. Susan Shaw is a professor of women, gender, and sexuality studies at Oregon State University. Really appreciate you coming on and talking with us.
It's great to be back on the show. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, we spoke in December right after sort of the election, and I wanted to check in with you in terms of, you know, it's been 3 months of the Trump administration, around 3 months, and so much has happened. I mean, it's been kind of a back and forth, a whipsaw, if you will, of all sorts of things. But specific to, you know, both what was promised in the campaign and what's coming to fruition, what are you observing in terms of, you know, the impacts on the transgender community here in Oregon, nationwide? Kind of, what are you seeing?
Well, certainly they have remained a primary target of this administration, and that's creating a lot of, I think, fear and uncertainty among trans people generally, trans athletes specifically. And I think that's part of this sort of broader trend that's really threatened all minoritized people right now. But I think trans folks are at the top of the list of people who are being threatened by some of the executive orders, the laws that are being passed in states. And so it's a scary time for trans people.
You mentioned, you know, specifically around trans athlete, what is being sort of couched in the guise of safety, you know, that that they don't want women playing against men because of safety issues. It seems like that's sort of a pretext for trying to just completely eradicate any kind of participation. Is that kind of what you see?
Well, yeah, and again, it's to scapegoat a small minoritized group of people, because if they cared about women's safety, they would pass some sensible gun laws. They would take domestic violence and sexual assault seriously. They would care about sexual harassment in the workplace. I mean, this is such a smokescreen that I think that they're using to try to enlist women in this by pitting cisgender women against trans women. But I don't think it's at all about caring about women and women's health and women's safety. Again, I think it's about enlisting people to right-wing causes by targeting a small, vulnerable population of people.
Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to Professor Susan Shaw, who teaches about women, gender, and sexuality studies at Oregon State University. You mentioned the word backlash, and I'm wondering, too, from where you're observing, you know, I've talked to people about who practice diversity, equity, inclusion, and see it as it's actually a good business practice. It's something that helps them to market their products and services more broadly. I'm wondering, you know, what you're seeing in terms of backlash against what the Trump administration is trying to do. I realize there's a tremendous amount of fear right now, but are you also seeing more pushback with regard to what these executive orders are trying to do?
Well, I'm certainly grateful I live in the state of Oregon. Mm-hmm. Because Oregon is not obeying in advance. The Oregon universities, the public universities, are not doing that. Their stance is we are in compliance with all civil rights laws because we do not discriminate against anyone on the basis of gender, race, sexuality, gender identity. And so I think that those are kind of the institutional pushbacks that are happening. The other thing is, you know, the sort of organized social movements that are going on. I went to the last protest here in Corvallis over mm-hmm. around the courthouse, and the estimate I saw was about 6,000 people. Now, Corvallis, as you know, is a small town, sure. And I had never seen that many people at a protest here. And I saw the footage of the protest in Portland, and it was huge there. And even in small towns in red states, there were significant protests. And so I think that people of goodwill are starting to come together to protest. And I've also seen recently some data that show that in the first Trump administration, that protest was effective. We didn't see it immediately, and we didn't really hear about all the ways in which it was effective. But everything I'm saying is keep showing up, keep protesting, keep the pressure on congressional representatives, because it does help make a difference. It helps slow down some of these movements and measures against diverse people.
Yeah.
And it made me really hopeful to go and to see that many people there, and to know that nationally people are showing up to say, this isn't who we want to be as a nation.
My last question for you revolves around the sexual politics, but also it revolves around this sort of coarse and harsh language and identifiers with regard to it. Here's what I mean. I am hearing, especially people on the right, who are saying, oh, thank goodness, now we don't need to worry about political correct speech, and, you know, the Me Too movement is now over. When you hear that, and then, of course, you know, there are several of the cabinet members in the Trump administration who have been accused of all sorts of things, including sexual abuse and misogynistic behavior. You know, Where do you see this going right now?
Well, we knew that white supremacist patriarchy was powerful. Mm-hmm. I also think the level of backlash shows how much progress for inclusion, equity, and justice has scared them. And I think that's why it's so harsh, is that there are people who benefit from white supremacist patriarchy who want to go back to those days where they could say what they want, think what they want, do what they want, and not be challenged on it, not have to work with people who are different, not have to be respectful and kind to people who are different. And I think that is Trump himself, and I think that he has unleashed that. And what's discouraging to me is that I think we believe that we had moved farther than we have. Hmm. And I think what really has happened is we had just pushed a lot of it underground because we made it no longer acceptable to say those things in public. And now Trump has given permission. And so we're seeing all of that rise back. I mean, a clear instance of that, I think, is the sort of the obeying in advance that we're seeing from corporations. Trump doesn't have political power to enforce, you know, policy. Mm-hmm. But they're all dumping their DEI as fast as they can. And I think that's because they never really believed in it. They did it because there was pressure. But of course, we know Target's profits are way down. Tesla's plunging. And so I think the left can also bring pressure to bear to say that we actually do care about it. And I saw something that, you know, traffic in Costco has increased for the 13th straight week as people are trying to support them for holding on to their diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. Wow. And so I think that, you know, we're in this moment, it could go either way. And I think it just depends on what progressive people and people in the middle and conservative people who do not agree with this kind of harsh language and mistreatment of other human beings, if we all join together and work together, we can make a difference and we can return us to values of acceptance and inclusion, equity, diversity, justice. So I'm hopeful. I hope we'll move in those directions.
Susan Shaw, she's a professor of women and gender and sexuality studies at Oregon State University. Always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for jumping on and chatting with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, you'll hear from a Bend and a coastal nonprofit who are experiencing severe budget cuts from the federal government and hear what they're doing to move forward. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.